Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the Empowering Beneficiaries conference call. Your host for today, Ms. Allison Moss, will now begin.
Thank you. Yes, this is Allison Moss, the founder of Empowering Beneficiaries and Vice President of Strategic Development at Paul Comstock Partners. Thank you so much for joining us today. As many of you know, Comstock is the parent company to Empowering Beneficiaries. And we've been educating clients about the markets, the economy, and investment for over 25 years. While we focus a great deal of our efforts on preserving wealth for our client families through investing, we find it equally important to prepare future generations who will one day manage the family wealth. We've long touted the importance of careful yet realistic planning that allows for future generations to be empowered by the wealth. Today's call marks the official launch of an idea that's been percolating in my mind for years now. Having worked with individuals and families to preserve and pass along their wealth for 9.5 years, as well as being a daughter, sister, wife, and mother, I really recognize the need for each of us to be empowered by our wealth, because the alternative, those unintended consequences of well-intended plans, can often lead down a road to somewhat miserable results. We certainly want to do whatever we can to help avoid that. Empowering Beneficiaries is designed to expand our educational efforts to assist families in the pursuit of positive outcomes for generations to come. So joining us today is really what I would call the poster child for Empowering Beneficiaries. Peter Buffett, who's the son of investor Warren Buffett, is here to share with us his experience as the son of one of the wealthiest and highly esteemed investors, and an individual who's created much success for himself. He wrote a book, Life is What You Make It, and I was ecstatic as I read it to learn that he shared so many of the same thoughts and concerns that I have in regards to money, family, and our own individual happiness. While you don't have to agree with everything Peter or I say, I do believe that you'll appreciate the message Peter has to share with us today, as so much of it is universal truth that money tends to mask. So if you disagree, we hope, though, that this will stir up a desire to continue the conversation and ignite further interest in how you can be empowered and or empower others in your family and your friends and community to use wealth for good. So Peter will share his story of how he chose to live his life, the decisions his parents made regarding wealth transfer, and why he wouldn't have it any other way. Peter, thanks so much for joining us today. We're glad you can be here.
Thanks so much for having me. I love being a poster child. And I'm not kidding.
Well,
it's great. Thank you.
Good. Well, I want to start. Can you tell us, first as an introduction, what prompted you to tell your story?
Well, honestly, it really was the fact that as I got older and was enjoying the fruits of my own labor, and as my dad got more well-known outside of financial circles, more and more people would say, you're Warren Buffett's son, you're so normal. And, of course, I took that as a great compliment, but I also thought it was a little bit sad. You know, why wouldn't I be normal? And what was it about the assumptions around wealth and success and all that that maybe I could correct a little bit? Maybe I could change the definition of success or privilege. And so that really is what prompted the book. I thought maybe by telling my story, it could, get others to think about their own.
Perfect. So your book is full of family stories and lessons taught to you by your parents and others that you came in contact with. And you talk about several family values that really impacted you throughout your whole life. In particular, you talk about self-respect. So I thought we'd start with that. You know, on page 34 of your book, there's a great paragraph in here. It says, self-respect can come only from earning your own reward. That is absolutely essential. And many of these privileged but empty people, often through no fault of their own, have been deprived of that difficult but redemptive adventure. Their families have handed them luxuries but diminished lives. As my father put it, they were born with silver daggers in their back. Tell us more about how you've had a path that you've gone down looking for this self-respect and why that's so important.
It's funny because I do this show, Concert and Conversation, where I take questions from the audience often. And invariably, and most recently in this last one, somebody would, you know, ask, wasn't there a time you asked for help? Wasn't there some time when you just said, come on, give me some cash to help me out? And I, my answer is that, yes, I think once. Probably myself and my siblings, my brother and sister, all did that once. But my dad, very brilliantly, I would say, didn't want really the money to get in between our own experience of life and our relationship as father and son or siblings or whatever it might be. And so he would invariably say to each one of us when we asked, and I think it was only once we had to, go to the bank, you know, you can do it, get a loan. And in fact, it was great advice because we did do that. We learned how the process worked. We learned that we could do it ourselves. We had a sound business or a sound financial basis. And if we didn't, we figured out how to get it. And by going through the process and the experience, you know, in life, that's the only way to really learn about yourself, what you're capable of, what you may not be, what you need to improve upon. All those things that, you know, in a sense, if you don't experience it, you're just never going to get a sense of it and a sense of yourself and a feeling that, wow, I did this. And so the reason we didn't go back and ask again isn't because we thought he'd say no. We actually knew the value of doing it ourselves, and there was just no replacing it.
I couldn't agree more. I've certainly found that to be true in my own life. The lessons that I learned that were the most impactful for life decisions going forward, kind of those ones that you really have to discover and go through on your own.
Absolutely.
I wanted to tell a little story about an experience I had that segues into a question I have for you here. You know, years ago, when I was still in college, I was asked by the mother of a friend of mine. We were in the car driving somewhere, and she said, well, which one of you and your sisters is going to take over the family business? And at the time, neither myself nor my sisters had ever worked for my dad and really didn't have any intention of doing so. I was a music major, my sister an artist, another sister at home taking care of her four children. So my reply to her was, well, no one. And she was astonished to hear this. She said, how could you let your father down? Well, I was astonished at her reply.
Wow, yeah.
And I said, well, thought to myself, not once during my childhood did my father ever express a desire for any of my sisters or I to take over his business. He did, however, completely support us in our various, and there were many, interests and ideas. I was never really pointed in a particular direction that either my parents wanted me to pursue, but rather really embraced worthy pursuits that I was passionate about and then provided guidance to help me make the most of those pursuits. And it sounds, Peter, that you had very similar experiences. And I suspect, though, you've also been asked that same question or something like it. Why wouldn't any of the children of billionaire investor Warren Buffett not get into the business? So what do you say to that?
Yeah, it's true. It does seem kind of crazy that one of us wouldn't have moved into that business. But to start where you left off in terms of how I grew up, there's no question that my parents were always saying, you know, do what you love. If you're lucky enough to find something you're really passionate about, because not everyone does right away, certainly, follow it, because everything else will come. You know, certainly happiness will follow that. And you know, it's one thing to be told that. It's another to watch it every day, which is the extra benefit with living with my father, you know, is that I saw him love getting up every morning, love coming home from work, you know, always at the dinner table, always knew right where he was afterwards reading the paper. And, you know, this consistency of a feeling around having fun working, and, of course, it isn't work if you're really having a good time with it. That's what I saw, and so that's what I wanted to emulate. So, you know, often people will say, gee, is your dad a little disappointed you didn't go into the business? And my response is we do the same thing. You know, we do what we love, and that's what was critical as I was growing up. That's what I was told, and that's what I saw. So it does seem, I guess, kind of silly that somebody wouldn't get into the business. But the truth is, the business really was enjoying what he loved, and we all got into that business. And you know, at the same time, honestly, I mean, unless I just had deep passion for it, I think it would be crazy to try and follow him just because he was good at what he did, and I should kind of ride on those coattails. So you know, I certainly I respect both of John Lennon's sons for trying to get into music, but boy, I don't think I'd choose that if I was John Lennon's kid. And you know, that's sort of the parallel here. It's like, you know, unless you just really love it, it could lead to some complicated living for sure.
Sure, and I love what you just said, though, that you followed something that you were passionate about, just like your father did, and that's success. So there's different definitions for success. I wanted to read another excerpt out of your book, and you wrote, "No father wants to deprive his son or daughter of the best possible chance of leading a full and satisfying life. No mother wants to hold her child back in the quest for self-respect and personal fulfillment. Why, then, do so many well-meaning families get it wrong?" This statement relates back to my earlier comment about the unintended consequences of wealth, and you shared with us a little bit, but what more can you tell us, especially in your experience, about your thoughts on the impact wealth has and how the parents can make better decisions in regards to their children, with or without that money playing a part in it?
Well, I think, you know, when I start out my show, I do talk about trying to redefine privilege and success. And the privilege, then I go on to talk about how I was raised and the environment I was raised in. And there's no question that the privilege was having a loving, stable, consistent household. It had nothing to do with money. And, you know, there are stories of people growing up in poverty that do great things, and there are stories of people, you know, growing up in the best neighborhoods not doing great things, you know, and vice versa. So it clearly has nothing to do with socioeconomic background, although you can certainly start out in a little better spot. But it has everything to do with parenting and supportive parents, and that, again, doesn't mean a blank check. You know, if every time I fell down, you know, my dad lifted me up, I wouldn't learn how to walk. You know, I mean, it's this consistent crutch that I would have ended up walking around with. And it gets back to the earning your own reward. You know, that has a feedback loop to it where the more you do it, the better you feel about yourself and the more you want to do. And so really, again, you know, the privilege was absolutely growing up in a consistent, loving, supportive household that really recognized I was a unique individual. I was going to live out my particular life in a unique way, and to put either a boundary around that in terms of being assumed that I would go into some particular business, or I could only be a success if I became X or Y, or here's a blank check to go off and follow your bliss. Either one of those can really lead to a hollow existence because you just don't know who you really are at heart.
So when I was at your concert in conversation a few months back, you told a great story about how your grandfather had left an inheritance for you and your cousins.
Right.
And how that story played out and impacted where you are today, really. Could you share with us that story?
Sure, absolutely. It started really with the fact that I loved playing the piano ever since I was a little kid. You know, I'd go over there and plunk things out, and I took lessons at different times and just really loved playing. And as I got a little older in high school, I started playing four-handed piano with a friend, and he was so good, it just pretty much dashed all hopes of me taking it seriously as a profession. I didn't really even think about taking it seriously because, again, it seemed like a hobby. I loved doing it, but there was something, you know, that I would have to do to actually make a living. So I went off to college not thinking at all that music was going to be my path, but not really knowing what it was going to be. So I took everything that ended in 101 or ology. And I'm not kidding. I took geology and sociology and astronomy and on and loved it because I learned so much about so many things. And I thought that would probably narrow the field a little in terms of what I wanted to ultimately get into. And about a year and a half in, when you start to run out of 101s and ologies, I had to start making a decision, and a couple of things happened at the same time. A friend said, you know, come over to my dorm. There's some guy playing guitar, and he's supposed to be good. I think you'll like him. You know, it'll be fun to listen to. And I went over there, and this guy playing guitar on the floor of this dorm was playing this beautiful music, and it had nothing to do with technical prowess. You know, it was all about choosing the right five notes that made you feel something and feel connected to the music. And that really was an epiphany for me. I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, I think I can do this, and I want to try and pursue music as a real career. Now, at the same time, I had learned that my grandfather had left all of us grandchildren a farm when he passed away in the early 60s, and that my dad had sold that farm because he couldn't stand the idea of a misallocation of capital. And so he sold that. And even though he didn't believe in inherited wealth, he figured that was the better thing to do, the more prudent thing to do with the investment. So
there
he put it into Berkshire Hathaway. And so when I turned about 19 or 20, I forget exactly when, I got $90,000 worth of Berkshire Hathaway stock. Right about the same time I had this epiphany about music. And so I called my parents and said, could I take some time off and pursue this? And they said, absolutely. You know, they knew I'd loved music all my life and felt it was great to buy the most precious resource, which is time, certainly, and invest in myself and try the music thing. So with complete blessing from my parents and some advice from my dad in terms of how to keep the expenses down and make the money last, because I knew it was all I was going to get. I mean, I never thought for a second that I was going to get another penny, and that was great motivation to use this $90,000 as effectively as possible. And in fact, I went on to create my career in music. It took a couple of years. It grew slowly, and then I happened to hit a couple of lucky breaks, and on went my career. And if I had not done a thing. If I had sat on my hands with that $90,000 and eaten ramen noodles for a few years while I watched it grow, I would have over $70 million today. And so I am, in fact, the poster child, living proof that I would rather have my life than that money. You know, I would much rather have a life that I built on my successes and failures and everything I learned and everything I did do and didn't do and everything else, you know, than a pile of cash based on someone else's success. You know, that would leave me constantly wondering if I could have done it on my own. And, you know, so it really is a absolute living life lesson of just that idea of your money or your life. And you know, that's, again, I wouldn't trade a thing.
And that's very powerful story for me to hear someone say, I would much rather have made the decision I did to pursue a personal pursuit than have such a large sum of money in the bank that would most certainly provide a nice lifestyle as well. And that's a personal choice that you made because of such a deep desire and the values that were instilled in you by your family and you pursued on your own to do something you could be excited about and passionate about. I just find that such a great example of how we can really, you've done both. You've pursued a personal passion and been able to provide so that you can also have a lifestyle you can enjoy. And along the way, I'm sure, as you mentioned earlier too, you've had different lessons learned about finances. You know, Empowering Beneficiaries is about educating people of wealth on ideas and providing resources for wealth transfer planning that we hope will lead to better outcomes for everybody involved. What kind of education, whether formal or informal, Peter, did you receive over the years and I assume still today, I know I'm always learning, about money. And what kind of wisdom have you gained in dealing with finances?
That is a great question, and I'm telling you, not as much as you'd think in terms of education. It's pretty funny, actually. So my lesson is save it and watch your credit cards. It's funny because my dad really pretty famously, walks his talk or talks his walk or both, and it's really fascinating because if you look at his style of investment and management and all that, it's really hands-off. He believes that people, will behave the way they're going to behave, and you can support them, but you can't lecture them. You can give them advice, but you can't tell them what to do. And, the whole thing with his style has been find people that love what they do and let them do it. So he does not get in the way of people's progress and character and all those things, or certainly does it as little as possible. And that's true with his kids as well. So instead of telling us what we should do and all that, if we went to him for advice, of course he would always give us advice, but he would never dispense it or expect that we would just follow some sort of rule that he imposed. And so frankly, I was allowed to fall down and get up more than once or twice, which was fantastic, but people would be surprised at how little literacy I had around economics and that sort of thing. And so I applaud your efforts, frankly, because I think it's important. I think that, in fact, I was, my brother would ask for more advice, and he'd get it, and I think my sister probably did too. It was my nature, maybe it's the artistic quality in me, to just kind of go it alone and figure it out, which my dad admired as well. He didn't care if I would fall down and get up. He probably loved seeing it. And, but at the same time, it's important when you are, and also I wasn't handed a lot of money, so it wasn't as if I had to think through big decisions around what might happen over time with a lot of wealth. So those kinds of things weren't put on me, but that's not to say I couldn't have learned a lot, some basic things that I could have, been taught through some help. And so, again, I think what you're doing, and this is not a paid announcement, but what you're doing is really, really useful for kids, because it is important, if you've got money coming your way, to think through, or obviously if you're a parent thinking about handing it down, I mean, that's why I'm here, really, is to really think through the impact of decisions on, years down the line. And but my own experience, it was pretty much self-taught.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that may be what worked well for you, since you said you had access, but you wanted to learn on your own, and there's others in your family that may have gone to him more for that. Really, I think it's such a gift when you allow people to get answers in ways that they would like to get answers, rather than impose them on others in a way that maybe they're not going to be as receptive to. So I really appreciate,
nobody,
you trying that perspective.
Yeah, nobody can, as any parent on the line knows, nobody's going to hear advice if they're not ready to, or take advice if they're not ready to hear it. And so, yeah, that's the trick always, is that if someone's coming to you and saying, I think I need help, or how can I get better at this, or whatever it might be, then somebody's open to listening. But if you're just there sort of preaching that this is the way it's got to be, and if the ears aren't open, it's not going to happen.
Right. And really, if you're wanting to empower someone, the ability to communicate and reach them in a way they'll be receptive to is vital, I think. It's just,
yeah,
it's so
absolutely
important.
Yeah.
So there's no cookie-cutter way to do these things, really. It's, as you experienced, and certainly I have as well in my life, those that are able to connect with you in a way that you connect are so much more impactful. that actually leads me right into my next question. You're serving now in a fiduciary capacity over a $1 billion foundation. What a responsibility that you have with that and each of your siblings. We talked earlier about the progression that you and your siblings went through that led up to this. It wasn't that your parents woke up one morning and said, I think the kids are ready to be philanthropists. So can you tell us about that journey and how you worked collectively and how you work individually in that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was extraordinary in June of 2006 when my dad did what he did with his money in terms of giving it away in various forms. But that did have a longer story behind it. And it started in the 90s, and I wish I could pull a date right out of my hat, but I don't know exactly. But we, meaning my brother, sister, and myself, were given, I think it was $100,000 each. I'm not sure if it was together or each. It was not a lot, regardless, in terms of money to look over to give away. But that's what we were given to give away for a number of years, just to sort of prime the pump, get us thinking about philanthropy without any sense of what was coming. And I'm not sure my parents even knew, but they just thought this would be a good thing to do with the kids, just to see if they take some interest and because something may be happening in the future, and who knows what that could be. So then in 99, at the end of 99, they gave myself and my sister and brother a $10 million foundation, which, of course, much larger amount, but with the 5% rule in terms of giving it away every year, still within reason in terms of the amount of money we had to oversee and get out the door. And so my wife, Jennifer, and I did that together. She did quite a bit of it, actually, and my siblings did their bit. And that went on for a while, and between 99 and 2006, that grew. Each of our foundations grew from $10 million to, I think, around $120 million. It kind of depended on the price of the stock and how we were spending it. But it grew over time because we were taking to it. We were having a good time doing it. We saw it as an incredible responsibility. But the key thing there and beyond was that instead of my parents thinking, let's throw all the kids into a foundation together and that'll make them, work together or kind of put them into a room together to try and do good things, they knew we were very different people and that we would probably have different ways of disseminating the money. And in fact, we may even work together more if we were able to go our separate ways, which is exactly what happened, so that the three of us had our own distinct foundations with no mandate from my parents because they believed in us and trusted us. We did not have to report back. We didn't have to do anything. Of course, that makes you want to do it. We did report back. We let them know what was going on. We get together at holidays and share stories and that sort of thing. And in fact, we ended up working together because we would find that even though we were going in different ways, we were kind of going towards the similar outcomes. So we may believe in education in one way or agriculture in some way or women's empowerment, and suddenly they start to intertwine and there's ways to work together. So we've done more of that probably than I wouldn't say then we would have if we all had one foundation, because we would have been forced to, but that's the difference, is we weren't. We were doing it because we wanted to. And then, of course, in June of 2006, that grew to a $1 billion foundation. That changed everything in terms of our commitment to it, the time required, the staff required, and that sort of thing. But still, all the principles, apply. We're still very much working together in certain ways, completely separately in most ways, frankly, but enjoying coming together, talking about what we're doing. And it has been an extraordinary experience, both as an individual, and for my siblings as well, but frankly also as a couple. My wife and I have really grown together and separately in ways we never would have without the foundation. And it has really made our relationship just so much richer. It's been fantastic.
You know, we talk about unintended consequences of wealth. I think you've just highlighted on some of the great ones. I doubt that any of you suspected that some of those outcomes would be outcomes when you first set out to do this. And I love hearing that you and your wife and the experience that you've had together as a result of this, and how exciting for you to be a part of that. And, you know, for those of you who have heard of Peter's concert and conversation that he does, it's really extraordinary visuals that he incorporates into his music, and it shows pictures of some of the philanthropic work that he's been doing through the foundation. How empowering that must be, Peter, to be able to embark on something on such a large scale due to a gift from your parents, and really allows you to go and do things that, you know, may or may not have been there otherwise. Who's to know, who's to say, but exciting nonetheless.
Absolutely, and that's a great point, is that what the really positive unintended consequence to all of this, and my dad had named it, and I hadn't expected it. When we were making the announcement just before, my dad said, you know, do you think this will affect your music? And I thought, well, the only way I can see that is by taking me away from it, but that's okay. You know, this is an incredible thing, too, and I'll figure out a balance. But little did I know that just like when I was a little kid and I'd be affected by something and I'd go to the piano and play, sure enough, you know, I would go to Liberia and experience the work we're doing over there and experience the people and come back and write about it musically. And this led to an event that I did at the UN and all these other places around the country and even the world at this point, because the philanthropic work affected my music so much. And now I'm able to, of course, tell the story through music, and it's been incredible. So yeah, there are things that can happen through the work that you certainly never would have expected.
That's the phenomenal part. We can only plan so much, and then we have to run with the values that we've been taught, the life experiences we've had, and make our life our own, like you write about in your book, and find our own path to fulfillment. I think it's an exciting story that you have and you've experienced in your life. I thank you so much for sharing it, both in
Absolutely.
Your book and
yeah.
with all of us on the call today. You know, Empowering Beneficiaries, when I was noodling around and thinking about what do I call this resource that I wanted to create, and came up with, a handful of things, wrote them down on a napkin at a restaurant, actually. And when I really sat back and said, what are we trying to accomplish here? We're working to get individuals as well as families to have a positive experience with or without the money. But especially when it's there, how do we navigate through some of the darker sides that can come with money to have a positive outcome? And empowering those who inherit. And we know how your dad feels about it. But for others who have different opinions, you know, how can we then make the most out of those situations rather than fall into some of the things that can come up just as a result of maybe even just not knowing or becoming complacent? So it's an effort. And like you have said throughout our conversation today, you've really had to work at creating this life of your own. And that path has been windy, but you've learned things along the way, and certainly everybody can say that. I don't know that those are the universal truths that I was mentioning at the beginning. There are some things that's how it is, and so how do we navigate that?
Yep.
I want to go ahead, and we have a few minutes, and for those of you listening on the call who have a question for either Peter or myself or comment about what we've been talking about today, we invite you to do that. And we do have a number of people on the call, so I just ask that you limit it to one question. And operator, if you would, go ahead and give instructions for those who would like to queue in for the Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, if you have a question at this time, please press the number 1 key on your phone.
As we're waiting for questions to come in, you're so open with your story, Peter, and I know I have been in times with others too, maybe too much. They've been like, okay, Allison, whatever. But, you know, for those of you also on the call that have questions that you'd like to ask, aside from the public conversation we're having, I hope that you'll email me at Allison@empoweringbeneficiaries.com so we can continue our conversation. Operator, do we have anybody in line for questions?
There are no questions at this time.
Well, that's just fine.
Okay, we'll keep talking.
Yes, well, we know that, you know, this can be sensitive area for some, and also an area that can still be unanswered for many people. We're still wondering what are the next steps that we're going to be. So, Peter, that's my question to you, is what are your next steps? You've got this book, you've got your concert and conversation, which is just phenomenal. What's next for you?
Well, you know, it's been such a surprise. I mean, again, I have really lived my life not saying I want to, you know, grow up and be X, you know, whether it's a film composer or a pop star or whatever it might be. I really let the music and some measure of pragmatism guide me. And so, of course, I had to make money making music first, and that got me into commercials, and then I got into film and television. And it kept growing and changing and surprising me because I didn't think I was ever done. And so, you know, while that was all really wonderful, and I've worked closely with the American Indian culture and all of that, when I started to talk about my own story, I realized that might be the most valuable thing of all, and that turned into the book and turned into the concert and conversation. And frankly, I am having so much fun doing this because it really does open people up, and really when I show up in my show, I take questions from the very beginning, so it's very much, honestly, a vulnerable position, you know, to put yourself in, because you don't know what kind of questions are going to come. But that showing up that way, I think, allows other people to be a little bit vulnerable too. And I think that's a lot of what this is all about, is it's okay. You know, nobody knows the answers. There is no right answer necessarily. There's only some guideposts. And if I can be one, that's very fulfilling. So really, I'm just right here, right now. I'm not sure what's next is going to be whatever comes from doing this, and I've been really enjoying it. And, you know, I was in Sarasota yesterday, and I'm off to the Bay Area next week. I'm talking to some high school kids there, which will be fun. Then I'm off to China to do the show there. The book is coming out there. So it just keeps growing, and I'm sure that will mean it'll start to change, and we'll see where I am in a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love when people ask me the similar question. As someone who studied music in their undergraduate degree and then ended up very unexpectedly working in a wealth advisory firm and now launched Empowering Beneficiaries, I never imagined that this is where my life would be, at least career-wise at this point.
Yeah.
And a very happy wife and mother, and you just never know what's going to come. And so having a good foundation and tools and resources to rely upon when changes, for good or bad, come up can be so helpful. And I think that today's conversation, as I hope for so many of you on the call and others listening in at a later time, that this ignites enthusiasm in you, as it has for Peter and myself, to keep the discussion going. And when things pop up, what are some unconventional as well as conventional ways of looking at it? And how can we be keeping ourselves on the path that leads to fulfillment?
Yeah, absolutely. I realized something major about the privilege of growing up in my home when I was in college. You know, and this speaks to kind of the surprises in life and where you might go. When I was a freshman, this girl came running down on a Sunday morning. She was absolutely thrilled because she'd gotten off the phone with her dad, and her father said, no, you don't have to be a doctor. You can be a lawyer. And I thought, oh, my God. You know, that really hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, wow, I am so fortunate to have parents that know that I could, you know, I may want to be a dancer or, you know, whatever it might be, and to follow that. And, yes, there's pragmatism involved, and maybe I'd end up, you know, taking accounting so I could work at a dance company as their accountant because I wasn't such a great dancer. But it got me closer to something I really loved, and I could be around it. And I think that, you know, it's just such a missing piece in so many lives when you are given the direction and said, this is what you got to do to be legitimate, when there are many ways, obviously, to lead a successful and fulfilling life.
Well, I certainly found that to be true in my life and those around me as we all go through this experience together. I really, really appreciate the message you've shared with us, Peter. I invite everybody to go to his website, peterbuffett.com. He's got phenomenal information on there, and his music's great. It's award-winning, and if you've not heard it, you really are missing out. So we'll be, this is, we said before, our first kickoff for Empowering Beneficiaries. I hope you will also go to empoweringbeneficiaries.com. We've got the blog there with information that will be posted regularly. And then, of course, we have the Next Generation Forum. And for those of you unfamiliar with that, it's a group of G2s, Next Generation family members, who are working to find solutions and ideas and tips for managing their family wealth, both the money and the personal aspect to it. And we've got a lot of people who are advisors in several different areas who are working with me in this forum. So please feel free to contact me for more information about that. So Peter, this is our call. Thanks again. And
all
I look forward
no questions
to continuing the conversation.
Sure. Someone's got to have a question. One question.
Oh. Operator, do we have anybody in queue?
Is it over?
We do have one question in queue from Christy.
Perfect.
Please go ahead.
Excellent.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Thank you so much. This is a pleasure to hear your experiences and to hear about some aspects of your life, Peter. And Allison, thank you for organizing this, a wonderful experience. Peter, one question for you. With regard to empowering beneficiaries, can you give insight as to anything that you might do differently than your father has done for the next generation?
Well, that's a great question, and you know, I have to be honest with you, I would say no. I mean, I really spell a lot of things out in the book, the things I really got from both of my parents. And I cannot discount my mother one bit in all of this as well. But I have to say, I mean, it's really why I'm doing this, because I feel so fortunate that I have this very odd platform of being my father's son in terms of what he's accomplished and being able to say, you know, what's so wonderful is I have my own life. I don't have some big shadow to get out from under. I don't feel any, you know, strained or a complex relationship with it. It's just, it's an extraordinary thing that I love to talk about. And so, honestly, I wouldn't change anything, which is not to say that everything's been perfect, but that's the point, is, you know, with the imperfection and the complexities, that's where you learn and grow. So, you know, at that time when I wished my dad would have done something for me, I knew he didn't, because it was out of true love and respect for my own capabilities. And, you know, so, I honestly wouldn't change anything.
Thank you. Beautiful commentary on parenting.
Thank you.
And just in case we have anybody else waiting in queue that doesn't remember how to get into queue, operator, could you give instructions again?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number 1 key on your phone.
Peter, in your concert and conversations, I remember the one I was at, it was a little while before somebody was brave enough to raise their hand and be the first one. So we've got our first one. We'll see if anybody else would like to join the conversation.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It always takes the first one or two brave souls out there to ask the questions, and then Usually, I mean, there are some shows where I have to actually say, okay, you know what, we got to keep going here because it could be much longer. So,
Hopper, do we have anybody in queue?
There are no questions at this time.
We must have answered them all, Peter.
All right. Well, see, there you go. I think that's exactly right.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. A recording of this call will be available. If you'd like to listen to it or share it with your friends and family, we certainly encourage you to do so. And be sure to go visit us on the web. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thank you.